girls. What? Keep it fresh. Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast spotlighting some of the area's most interesting and accomplished women. Today we have a special episode of Female Trouble that's not really an episode of Female Trouble at all. Baltimore Sun reporters Brittany Brito and John Williams IV are launching a new podcast called Melanin Pop. It's about intersectionality, race, pop culture, all kinds of interesting things, and it's going to be really cool. They have a timely royal wedding-related interview, so you can listen to that here as a preview of what's to come with that podcast. Also, if you don't already listen, we have another Sun podcast called Roughly Speaking, hosted by columnist Dan Rodericks, so be sure to check that one out too. We'll be back with an episode of Female Trouble on Tuesday, but without further ado, here's Melanin Pop.
I'm Brittany Brito.
And I'm John Williams IV.
And this is Melanin Pop.
Pop, pop, pop. Melanin Pop is basically the intersection between race, pop culture, and current events, spun together in a playful, conversational way.
So we're really excited for this segment. Mm-hmm. We will be talking about the royal wedding, which has had so much fanfare, drama, criticism, a little bit of racism.
A little bit of racism.
So we have a very special guest for this segment.
Yes, we have Zoe Washington. And I've known Zoe for a number of years, and Zoe is fantastic. She's a fashion expert, and Zoe is the senior fashion and beauty editor for Britain Co. They are a lifestyle brand based out of San Francisco, and Zoe is a hometown Baltimore native.
Awesome, and she is a wealth of knowledge. So in this segment, she's going to give us her predictions. This was actually recorded in April. So she gives us her predictions on what Meghan Markle will be wearing.
Zoe was right.
She was right. Mm-hmm. And also some tidbits about what it's like to work in the wedding industry.
Absolutely.
And some history for us.
Quite a bit of knowledge that she was kicking around, and I was like, I even learned a few things. And that's saying a lot, because I know of a good deal of fashion.
Awesome. So let's jump right in. So what would you say got you started or first interested you in the bridal genre?
In bridal, bridal had never really been my big thing, but I was really into red carpet.
Okay.
Like all the celebrity fashion, all the like glam and glitz. When I worked at Vogue, I did the Met Gala. I went to the Met Gala, which
awesome.
Was amazing. Like that was peak. That's the peak fancy.
Yes.
And you just see these really special moments in people's lives, and the red carpet's so amazing, and the collaboration with designers. And so the most, relatable extension of that is bridal. Mm. And so getting involved in the bridal market, we did, at Britain Co., we've done a Facebook Live with Kleinfeld Bridal.
Oh, the famed Kleinfeld.
Famed Kleinfeld. And you know what? Famed for good reason. When I got my wedding dress there, and when we went to do this Facebook Live, we did it with Panina Tornay, who, if you watch Say Yes to the Dress, you're very familiar with her. Mm. She's like very over the top, very luxurious designer. And it was just the most fun moment ever. And bridal is all about fantasy. Like, all this is fantasy. So that's what's so great about that market.
So bringing us to our conversation now,
mm-hmm.
the royal wedding.
I can't wait.
May 19th, it's going to be amazing.
It is.
And for so many different reasons, right? We have an American and a biracial American, and most people are calling her, the Black Princess. So it seems like it's a moment. Why do you feel like it's so significant?
Yeah.
We feel like we're a part of the royal family now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's significant for all those reasons and more, but I feel like, one, it's so interesting when other Black people are like, this is the first Black princess. I'm like, what are we saying about ourselves? Like, we are completely denouncing, centuries of
kings and queens.
Mm-hmm. So in that regard, like, it's the first Black princess maybe within the European context, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's significant. It's also, like, a super relatable person. You see this woman who is an actress, has kind of, typical messy bun hairstyles, dresses an American designer. She's not over the top glam. It's mm-hmm. not, we're not talking about like an Angelina Jolie or a someone like that who is on a total another level of celebritydom. This is someone who most people, you know, if you watch the USA Network, you're
Love Suits.
Yep. So then there you go. Suits. Someone who most people have seen in some way, shape, or form through the show. Mm-hmm. So that is some of the reasons why it's so significant. And also, you know, you have to remember Prince Harry. Like, Harry was the one that, you know, he was the spare. He's the one that everybody's obsessed with because he's, like, you know, unencumbered by royal decrees, and he mm-hmm. doesn't have to do the same kind of pomp and circumstance. He can be a little bit more informal, and he's always been seen as the more fun one.
So the bad boy. He had a face.
That he's, like, marrying this African-American, you know, actress from the U.S., all of those just, like, name every box and it's checking it. Like, it's right. just everything against the norm. So there's so many reasons to celebrate. And also, she's got great style, which if she were basic, I really would not be this excited. I'm going to be honest, because I would be like, oh, great, like, took some Joe Schmo from wherever the, you know, and then just put her up in a dress and then we got. No, yeah. This is like someone who's been very vocal and
kind of made for fashion.
Made for fashion. She's beautiful. She's smart. She's eloquent. She's outspoken. And she seems to be doing things in her own way, you know, right. marching to the beat of her own drum, which I like.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's very poised without being off-putting.
Yes.
Or being rigid. You right. know, I think she's very, you know, elegant without being stuffy.
Yes.
So I think it's a great marriage of sort of the American sensibilities and the British thought process, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some of the bridal trends that you think you will see during that mm-hmm. the royal wedding. Well, first, can we talk about, I know there are going to be like a lot of fascinators and over-the-top hats and this and the other. I can't wait. It's going to be like going to Sunday church.
It's going to be going to Sunday church that you're not invited to.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of not invited, I hear Trump is not invited.
Right.
Theresa May is not invited.
Right.
And I heard that Elton John said he hadn't even gotten his invitation, which means that you right. aren't invited either.
Exactly. Oh, don't
is he normally invited?
I think
his relationship with Diana and his association with the royal family. I think it's presumptuous to even talk about how you were not invited and how you were expecting an invitation. Yeah. Like, honey,
I just kept it mute.
Yes.
And just watched it at home. Like
you could have gotten ahead of the story and been like, "I'm busy on the 19th."
Like, I'm going to the moon. We didn't have to know.
He's like, "I've got that hair appointment. Yeah. I can't cancel."
But I haven't gotten my invitation yet. Boo.
Boo. That is so. It's just thirst buckety.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. "You're dehydrated."
Dehydrated.
Yes.
Yes. I know. But yeah, so I'm not sure about the whole Obama situation, whether or not he was like, it was rumored that he was invited, and then now they're saying that he isn't, and then no political figures are invited, but instead they're inviting like charity workers, which I think is a lie. And then, you know, it's like,
yeah, that's interesting.
Talking about charity workers. The head of the Red Cross is not a charity worker, you know, like don't exactly. Don't mix and match.
That's wild.
So who knows who is coming. I'm excited about the fascinators. The fascinators, to me, I grew up looking at church hats, which are different. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking at like black, particularly Southern, like church style, mm-hmm. traditional church style, that is something totally different. And I think the two get mixed and matched a lot when people talk about like church hats and royal wedding stuff. But fascinators are a particularly European kind of weird hodgepodge and circus that I am interested in as well.
I'm here for it too
because here is where you have this parade of women who have very particular sensibilities when it comes to style, very particular rules when it comes to what to wear to like a royal wedding mm-hmm. or to any formal occasion for that matter.
Right.
And this is them at their most ridiculous. Like they look in my opinion, crazy. Like I don't think anyone looks good in a fascinator. I'm sorry.
Really?
I don't think anyone looks good in fascinator.
When I dress my models for
Preakness,
and Preakness will be the same day as the royal wedding.
Right. Yes.
Which is really crazy.
I love that. Yeah.
There's so much going on or whatever, and I'll be on WBAL that morning doing, you know, fashion.
Oh, I love it.
Fashion.
Mm-hmm. I'll stay tuned.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, the fascinators I use for my models are always on point.
The fascinators themselves can look lovely. I don't think that the proportion of a fascinator to a human head is flattering in any way, shape, or form. It to me, because especially with these, I think unless you're getting into full Philip Tracy, like you got to give me real high end. You've got to give me, you know, even the American Eugenia Kim, you can give me some great hat designers, and I still might find a little fault. It is rare, I think, that an everyday woman, non-model, I'll say non-model, is able to pull off a fascinator. Now, can they pull off really great, lovely hair accessories that kind of verge the line, almost get to that fascinator territory? Sure, but I just think fascinators, when they're the tiny hats and then they're strapped to the head and then they're walking around, they got a feather out of it, I think it looks so... You look like you are some sort of reject from Alice in Wonderland.
You know what? I'm here for it.
But when there's a lot of them, I think about it less. I'm like, okay, everyone's wearing a fascinator, and then I'm more focused on, oh, I like that fascinator, or I like this fascinator. It's like, it's a moment that everyone's having. Yeah.
I'm like, how can you see? How can anyone see past the other person? It's just, there's so many practical issues that I have with fascinators, but it will be fun.
Yes,
and I've
it will
heard, Little Birdie told me that the Philip Tracy house is like overrun.
I'm sure.
With orders.
I am so sure.
You know, my son, Michel, which is like the Chanel sort of outpost, the specialty hat maker, is also overrun. I don't know about Americans, whether or not like the Jennifer Bears and the Eugenia Kims have been seeing that effect. Mm. But what you do see trickling down into actual ready-to-wear bridal is this emergence of really, really great hair accessories. That's a big trend this year. Mm. And I see that very much as like a Meghan Markle effect, that people, and also, I mean, you could also account like the Pippa Middleton wedding was really influential as well. And I hate to even give props to it, because I'm like, it's a sister of somebody, you know, but that just sort of sparked, gave us a little appetizer for the kind of crazy hat game and the hair accessory game.
Speaking of the main course, who do you think she's going to wear?
Oh, I've prepared a list of designers that I think might be contenders. I think it's going to be interesting. Okay. The front runner, in my opinion, is the design house of Ralph and Russo. Do you know?
Okay.
Yeah. So I love Ralph and Russo. They're actually a married duo, Australian married duo, who are based in London. When I was in London in September, I was tying my shoe. So my shoe came loose, and I put my foot on a step just out of nowhere. And I looked, it was their place. It was their atelier. And the two designers walked out with this amazing gown that they had just packed up. And you could see all of this like red Duchess satin through the garment bag. And the woman was like, what is going on here? Because there's just some average American sitting there tying her shoe, chilling, thinking about going to Pret a Manger, you know, like whatever. But I love them. They're so decadent. They're really over the top without being garish and gaudy. You know, they use kind of like luxurious fabrications, think like that Oscar de la Renta kind of chantilly lace, lovely delicate details, but all of this is done on pretty clean silhouettes, so it's super wearable. And we know that she loves them. She wore them for one of her engagement photos to Prince Harry.
And gorgeous.
Really gorgeous. And that was the most dramatic of them. And I think that sensibility, that sort of marriage, because they're very young. The design duo, I think they're in their early 30s, if they've broken 30. And their label has really risen up the ranks. I think it's one of the most popular British houses, at least. And considering one of the most expensive, you know, designers that you can buy today, it's a favorite among, like, you know, all the princesses love
nice.
Ralph and Russo. So there's that. Then I think she could do, there's, people are talking about Erdem. I'm not sure if they're bringing it up just because Erdem is this like very typically British, in that he's actually Turkish, but his company is very floral inspired. Everything is about you know, juxtapositions of florals and patterns and prints.
Interesting.
You know, really luxe, really wearable. Most people would know his designs on the contemporary market because a lot of women wear him to work. Obviously, women of certain means. They were a favorite of Michelle Obama. Erdem right now, actually, I think either today or tomorrow, just launched a collaboration with NARS. He's got a lot of things going.
Now, his style, just from your description, it seems like it's a little bit busier.
It's a little bit busier. Okay. And he's one of those designers who's all about femininity. I mean, every single one of these that, like, we'll talk about is all about, you know, very feminine, very gorgeous, very girly. You have to be, to a certain extent, to be a bridal designer. Erdem and Ralph and Russo both do, like, bespoke custom couture work. So, you know, they're not they're not, like, you know, out of the running for something of this magnitude. A lot of people are also bringing up Misha Nonu. So Misha Nonu is a New York-based designer who I did a video with recently, like last year. She has a very international background. She was based in London for a while. Mm-hmm. Her ex-husband is very close friends with Harry, so there's that connection. And Meghan actually wore her white button-down shirt for that first sighting that they had together where she was at the Invictus Games.
Okay.
Where she wore, like, the classic men's inspired button-down shirt.
Yeah.
So Misha Nonu is known for, like, you know, desk to dinner wear. She's all about clothes that can kind of multi-purpose and that you can wear to the meeting. It's perfect for the corner office and perfect for a couture show. So you'll get, like, really great tailoring in terms of blazers, really poppy bold reds and brights. But I don't know her to be a wedding dress designer. The conversation swirling around her is really because they're friends.
Okay.
And she's worn a lot of her pieces, you know, since sort of debuting with Harry. So they're wondering whether or not, like, you know, she's going to help kind of launch her friend to a whole nother level. So mm-hmm. Then there's the old standby, Alexander McQueen by Sarah Burton. I mean, you can't deny the plausibility of that. So it's highly plausible that that will be the winner. Although I think if I have studied Meghan enough, I don't think she's going to go with a brand or a label that Kate Middleton went with. I think that she'll go with someone who is slightly unexpected.
So she kind of is like a Michelle Obama then.
I think she is.
With the fashion aspect.
But here's the thing. I think that I thought that at first. I was like, oh, she's wearing, like, Misha. She's wearing Strathberry, which is a typically British. So she's paying homage to where she's going to be setting up shop. So in a way, I thought so too. And embracing some affordable sort of workwear-inspired labels. But then with the engagement photos, I thought that she really, you know, Meghan
turned
really
the
threw.
Corner.
Yeah, she really threw us for a loop because there's different sets, as people know, like one that was a little bit less formal and then one that seemed very luxurious and over the top and beautiful. I mean, absolutely amazing and super dramatic. Mm-hmm. And that was unexpected to me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think she has an effect. And I think what she's very similar to Michelle Obama in that for, you know, one of the first times you're seeing an African-American, a person of color in this position of power and intrigue and of influence when it comes to style and fashion that has nothing to do with being a performer or being a designer themselves or, you know, being in the entertainment industry. So she didn't have this influence when she was an actress, but as a sort of vaguely political figure, political by association, much like Michelle Obama. Yeah, she has that.
Having brown skin, are there any wedding trends or just styles or things that kind of relate to that or how clothes will appear on brown skin? Or
I don't know if it's as direct as that, but I would say that this year, I think it was List and a couple other sort of fashion aggregator sites had come up with bridal trends, and they had talked about the rise of, like, colorful bridal dresses, whether it was red or sort of peachy nudes. Yellow is also a color, an unexpected color. That rose gold is continuing to be a big thing. Ombre effects on dresses are still a big thing, and gold. And I think that a lot of that has to do not so much with, like, how this will look on black skin or how this will look on women of color, but the fact that women of color of different cultures have been wearing colorful wedding dresses.
My Indian friends tell me that they don't wear white.
No, white is for funerals, I think. So, you know, and then when you, I'm going to say this and it's going to sound ridiculous, but the way that people have embraced sort of vaguely African design in lieu of Black Panther. Mm-hmm. You have seen a lot of designers from Versace to Erdem, actually, quite frankly, really embrace this sort of idea of color and being excited about bringing color into the spectrum and in unexpected places, in celebratory moments, and that includes bridal. I think that color is just being introduced, and as we know, color looks good on women of color.
Speaking of women of color, Amsala, the amazing bridal designer, a woman of color, passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me to thinking, who is left? Like, off the top of my head, I was like, that was the only major black designer that I knew in bridal.
I mean, you're right. In a way, there isn't anyone of that level left. Like, you know, Amsala came onto the scene in the mid-80s. What her first account was actually with Kleinfeld. And she really established herself right away as one of the first designers, and this is like during the height of like dynasty, one of the first designers, particularly wedding designers, to really create a minimalist look. A lot of people think that was Vera Wang, who brought that sort of ready-to-wear sensibility to the bridal market. It was not. It was Amsala. Amsala brought that in clean lines, simple silhouettes, unencumbered details. You know, like the skirting, which she always started with the skirt design first, was always super simple. A lot of prominent wedding designers that we know right now started in her atelier. You know, she kept it simple. She wanted this for brides who didn't want a lot of pomp and circumstance, but still wanted to look elevated and elegant. So she will be missed. You know, I think that they have a succession set up so that her label will continue, which is amazing. I believe her husband is still the head of the company. So, you know, the legacy lives on. But in terms of black designers, and you see this in ready-to-wear as well, there is a lack of representation, a lack of prominence of black wedding designers. There is like probably like a handful of people. There's a label in Atlanta, Brooklyn, and I think New Jersey that most people kind of talk about. But it, when you talk about wedding designers in general, there's so many tiers, right? Like there's the people who's the companies that really operate on a custom level, who work with, you know, one-on-one customers. And then there's the ones that have sort of wholesale accounts that might be more mass market. And then there's like the really big labels, the labels that can charge $30,000, $15,000 for a wedding dress. That's where Amsala was. That was the stratosphere that she existed in. And we don't have anyone on that level right now. Mm. We do have a kind of unspoken history with African-American wedding designers in this country. Jacqueline Kennedy's wedding dress was designed by a black woman. Mm-hmm. Anne Lowe, who many people consider to be like the first major fashion designer in America in the 1950s and 60s. You know, what her sort of demise was that she didn't have the business acumen or the ability to really set up a full brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's partially because of the times, but her own sort of lack of experience. You know, she only charged Jacqueline Kennedy like $500 for her wedding dress.
Wow.
And she dressed her and her entire wedding party, including her mother. So there's that. You know, there's Elizabeth Keckley who did, I mean, we're going way back, but Mary Todd Lincoln's wedding dress.
Way
all the way back. As back as you could possibly go when it comes to that. But, you know, that is a legacy. And she and Mary Todd Lincoln had a, like, really crazy, unique, close relationship that's like, you know, it's inspired movies and plays and things like that. So we do have a legacy there. It's just that I think most designers have kept it to a local level and kept it to a bespoke level, which is amazing. But you just haven't seen anyone really break out. And those that have broken out are still not household names. So they might be more on the sort of like a boutique level, but no one has become that, like, who's the designer to go to during bridal fashion week kind of level, which is sad.
Zoe, you're always a wealth of knowledge.
Thank you.
Yeah, you could speak for hours, but we don't have hours.
I'm like marinating it all.
I love it. I could go on and on and on. I can't wait until May 19th.
Where will you be?
I am excited. I'll be at home. I'll be sitting around with Breath That Is Baited, all my Getty images, waiting for the first looks. I've got writers on it.
Yeah, I'll be at the TV station doing Preakness looks. And right. I'm going to Preakness to do Preakness fashion.
And just Preakness all the Preakness.
Preakness Peak all the Preakness. Peak Preakness. Zoe Washington, thank you so very
thank
much.
You.
And
thank
tell
you.
Us your...
Go to Brit.co for all the fashion and royal wedding coverage that you could ever, your heart desire. We just launched a recent swimsuit guide. So if you're in the look for, if you're looking out for a great swimsuit, I've got the perfect one for your body type.
So that concludes our segment.
Thanks for joining us for this small little glimpse of what our show is going to be like.
And stay tuned for the pilot, which will release later this year.
Absolutely. And Kanye West, you're still whack.